North End and Kollel, she'd given on Sunday, Tes Cheshvan Tovshin Ayin Aleph, which is the 17th of October 2010. I'd like to give this she'd given by Gershon Heppner in the North End and Kollel. I'm giving this she'd Le'ilu Nishmas, my late father-in-law, Rabbi Yaakov Chaim Ben Reb Menachem Halevi Rosenberg, Zichron Levracha. Today's his 20th Yahrzeit. WS Yahrzeit today. Last night we learnt Mishnayos. The family learnt Mishnayos. Today I'll give the shir Le'ilu Nishmaso. As a man who used every spare second he had for learning, he was a very, very sick man. Yeah, he was a very, very ill man. He had heart trouble from when he was a young man, and he used this time for learning. And in the minutes here and there, he finished Mishnayos Shas 1 3/4 times, just by picking up a sefer here and there when he had a few minutes spare. Okay, now what we're going to do today is I'm going to go back to Tehillim chapter Yud, Pasuk Gimel. This is a one-off. The reason is that on the website the recording devices failed when we did it first time, and we did it first time. I can't remember how long ago, quite a while back, but I think we did it. It was about 2 years ago that we did it. April, I think, 2 years ago that we did it first time. But the recording device cut out. So I'm just going to go back now to that. It's Perek Yud, Pasuk Gimel, and it'll be a one-off show on that. And then the Mitzvah Shem next week we'll carry on with chapter 17. Okay. I'll go from the beginning of the Perek just to get into the Perek. Lama Hashem Tamed Barachuk. Why Hashem do you stand at a distance? Ta'alim, you hide yourself l'itos batzora during bad times. So David says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we could do with you HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going through a rough time, and why do you hide yourself? We would be delighted if you would show your presence to us to help us out of difficulties. Be'ga'avas Rosha, due to the conceit of the wicked man, Yidlak Oni, he pursues the Oni. Yidlak is to pursue. He pursues the poor person. In other words, the Rosha, he oppresses the poverty-stricken person. Yitofsu, they become trapped. Bimizimos zu choshavu, with these wicked plans that they think. In other words, the poor person, the poor oppressed person who really has a hard time in life, his time is made even worse because the Rosha oppresses him even more. And the poor person becomes trapped by the plans of the wicked one. That's how Rashi learns this pasuk. The Radak learns this pasuk a little bit differently. The Radak learns Begavas Rosha Yidlak Oni, due to the conceit of the Rosha, he chases the Oni, and then David davens Yitofsu, Halavai, I wish the wicked people would be trapped or would be caught Bimizimesu Choshovu with their own wicked plans. So he's saying, I wish they'd be, in English you say, I wish they'd be hoisted on their own petard. So Rashi learns this pasuk is the last half of the pasuk Yitofsu Bimizimesu Choshovu means that the Oni is trapped by the wicked plans of the Rosha, and the Radak learns Yitofsu, using it literally in the future tense, they should be trapped. I wish the wicked people who are oppressing the poor, I wish the wicked people would be trapped with their own wicked plans. That's how Radak learns it. And with that, we're ready really now to have a go at Pasuk Gimel. So, Pasuk Gimel reads, Ki Hillel Rosha Al Ta'avas Nafsho, the Rosha praises himself, Al Ta'avas Nafsho, due to the desires of his soul, Uvotzea Beirech, and Uvotzea means the robber, the thief, Beirech, he blesses himself, Niyetz Hashem, he despises God, or he disgusts God, something along those lines. Kehila Rosha al Tavas Nasho, the Rosha praises himself. Now Rashi learns that this pasuk goes back to the very beginning of the chapter, Pasuk Aleph, where Pasuk Aleph says, Lama Hashem Tamed Brochag, why do you stand at a distance? And Rashi explains, David asks Hashem, why do you stand back at a distance when we see that the Rosha praises himself for attaining all his evil desires? Kihila Rosha Al Tavas Nashe. The Rosha gives himself a pat on the back. He says, you know, good for me, you know, I'm I'm achieving all my evil wishes and my evil desires. And he praises himself for it. So, and therefore, David asks him, Lama Hashem Tamid Berachot, why do you stand back? You should go for that Rosh and punish him. Why do you stand at a distance without punishing him? Kihila Rosh al Tavas Nasho, still learning like Rashi, the Rosh praises himself on attaining his evil wishes. Uvetzea, and the thief, Beirich, again, blesses himself. Nietz Hashem, he disgusts God. So according to Rashi, you can see the Pasuk is very much a parallelism, where the second half of the Pasuk echoes the first half, that the Rosh praises himself on his evil attainments. Oh, that's how Rashi learns it, and Nietz, Rashi says, Nietz Hashem, the thief blesses himself, Nietz Hashem, and he blasphemes God. Let's see, he blasphemes HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi is at pains to point out that the word Beirich, or Vetzea Beirich, is not to be confused with a very similar word, which is Berech. Beirich, Beirich with a Tzerei under the base and under the Reish, is a totally different word from the word Berech with a Segel under the base and under the Reish. Yeah, the word Berech means a knee. A knee, as in bowing, exactly. Sichra lechos, sichra kol berech. Every knee shall bend to you. We say in the second paragraph of Alinu. Yeah, sichra kol berech. And oh, I don't know. I don't know why it's got the same shorish. Don't know.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, but that connects to the word Beirich, which is to bless, or in our case, it can also mean to bless. Beirich, the thief blesses himself.
Isn't it translated as a spring or a
Beirich is a spring. There's a very famous piece of Sefer Chinuch that explains that the word Beracha, we say Berachat Hashem, is related to the word Beirecha, which is a spring of water. Denoting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all blessing. That's the Sefer Chinuch. I don't know where that Sefer Chinuch is, but it's a well-known piece of Sefer Chinuch. So but here, the thief blasphemes. He praises himself, and he blasphemes against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this word Beirich is very different from the word Berech. Berech is a noun; it means a knee, and Beirich means is a verb. He blessed himself. Yeah. Now the Targum on this pasuk is an interesting piece of Targum. Matu. The Ishtabach Rashia, because the Rasha praises himself, Al Rigruv Nafshe, on attaining the evil desires of his soul, Demavarech Gavra Taloma, when a low life man, Taloma means a lowly person, a lowly person, what does he do? Mirchak, or it might be Marchak. How to read this word? Mirchak Mimrat Hashem. He distances the word of Hashem. Now, the Targum is added in that last thing. Mirchak Mimrat Hashem. So he translates Nietz Hashem, which really means he blasphemes against God, as Mirchak Mimrat Hashem. He pushes away the word of Hashem, which of course comes to much the same idea. He's blaspheming against God. He's pushing away the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what is interesting is we have the words Ki Hillel Rosha, which Rashi learns means the Rosha praises himself. So the word Hillel literally means he praises. So it looks like a verb with a direct object. What's the word? What do they call this? A verb?
Reflexive.
No, not reflexive. No, that's... what was it? It looks like... Oh, I've forgotten the word. Oh, what's it called? When a verb has a direct object, like he writes a letter, the verb it has an object, a direct object which goes along with the verb, what you're doing it to. Hillel looks as though he's praising someone else, ki Hillel Rasha. But Rashi learns, as you said, Johnny, that it means it's reflexive, he's praising himself. And that is exactly how the Targum learns it as well. because the Lashon in Targum is Metzul de Ish Tapach Rashiya. Ish Tapach means literally is the root of Shin Veisches, and it's used in the Hispoel, which is to praise oneself. Ish Tapach. Ishtabach Rashiya, the Rasha praises himself, which is how Rashi learns it. Kihila Rasha, the Rasha praises himself, Al Tavas Nafsha, on attaining his evil desires. So that's how the Targum learns it. Ishtabach. Now the Radak learns a little bit differently. The Radak learns that our Pasuk is not a continuation of Pasuk Aleph, which is how Rashi learns it. Rashi learns, why do you stand back? Why, Hashem, do you stand back when the Rasha is praising himself over attaining all his evil desires? But the Radak learns that the Rasha is praising himself, and he's also... the Radak learns that this Pasuk is a continuation of Pasuk Beis. In Pasuk Beis, the Radak learns, Yetofsu b'mezimesu chashavu, that I wish the Rishoyim would be trapped by their own wicked plans. I wish the Rishoyim would be hoisted on their own petard. Yetofsu b'mezimesu chashavu. And our Pasuk continues that. Why do I wish that? Because the Rasha praises himself, Kihila Rasha al Tavas Nafsha. Because the Rasha praises himself on his evil desires, I wish that they would. I wish the Rishon would meet their own sticky ends. That's how the Radak learns it. The Radak also learns a very different pshat from Rashi. Look how the Radak learns, Kihila Rasha al Tavas Nafsha. The Rasha praises himself on attaining his evil desires. The Radak learns that half the same way as Rashi, but the second half he learns differently. Uvotzea Beirech, and he blesses the Votzea. Not that the Votzea is the thief who Beirech, who blesses himself. No. Uvotzea Beirech, the Radak learns, the word Votzea is the object of the verb that the Rasha blesses the Botzea, who is a thief. Not quite the same as the thief blessing himself, but rather he blesses someone who's a thief. He gives him a shkoyach, you know, he encourages other people to do averis. And likewise, Nietz Hashem is the same idea. The Radak learns that the Rasha Beirech also blesses the one who blasphemes against Hashem. So according to the Radak, it's Kihila Rosh al Tavas Nasha, the Rosh blesses himself or praises himself for attaining his evil desires, and that same Rosh Uvotzea Beirech, he also blesses a thief, and that self same Rosh Nietz Hashem, he also blesses the one who blasphemes against God. That's how the Radak learns the Pasuk. Yeah. And the Meiri learns very similarly. The Meiri learns that a person who blesses a Botzea, or Botzea Beirech, he who blesses a thief is automatically also Nietz Hashem, is automatically also blaspheming against God. If you're prepared to give a thief a pat on the back, then that's an automatic blasphemy against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how the Meiri learns the Pasuk. Now, the Yalkut Me'amloes learns, oh yes, very interestingly, the Alkham Amloi says that he quotes the Pasuk in Koheles, Ki Ein Tzadik Ba'oretz Asher Ya'aseh Tov Lo Yechta. There's such thing as a person who never ever does an Aveira. Everybody sins at least occasionally. However, a Tzadik who does an Aveira, after having done the Aveira, he'll regret the Aveira, he'll do Teshuvah. But here we're talking about someone who's an out and out Rasha. Kihila Rasha al Tavas Nasho. He's done Averis, and what does he do after the Avera? He gives himself a pat on the back. He feels proud of himself. Yeah? Not like a tzaddik who does an Avera and then regrets and does Teshuvah. No. Kihila Rasha al Tavas Nasho. He thinks he's on top of the world. He's delighted. He rejoices in the Averis that he's performed.
Niatsnu.
Oh, yes, of course.
In this,
we've blasphemed, or we've disgusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
Niatsnu,
yes, Moradnu Niatsnu, the one for Nun, of course, I've forgotten about that, So that's
blasphemed. It doesn't mean saying Hashem's name.
Not necessarily.
It's like a rebellion.
Yeah, rebellion. Yes, that's right. Yeah, which is automatic form of blasphemy, I suppose. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The Alkemamos also says that this pasuk is a reference to one particular Rasha. Which Rasha? Goliath. Goliath, who challenged Klal Yisrael to a duel, to a fight. Well, when David was prepared to fight him, what did this Rosh Goliath do? You'll find it's a pasuk, it's in Shmuel Aleph, chapter Yud Zayin, pasuk Mem Dalet. Vayomer ha-plishti el David. What did Goliath turned to David and he said, Lecho Eli. He was taunting him. Come to me, yes, you want to have a fight? Yeah, come on, have a fight. Come to me. Ve'et no es pesorcho, and I will give your flesh, le'oth hashamayim, to the birds of the heaven, or le'vem hasadeh, and to the animals of the field. Yeah, you want to fight me? Come along and I'll kill you in an instant, basically he was saying. And I'll feed you to the birds and to the animals. So this is Kihil al Rasha. He's praising himself and al Tavas Nafsho. He's not prepared. He's a Rasha who's blaspheming. He's a Rasha who's conceited to the nth degree. And that's how the Alkemam says that this pasuk is a reference to Goliath, who praised himself, who was conceited, and spoke to David before David chucked a little stone at him and killed him as an absolute miracle that he killed Goliath. The Medrashim speak about what an amazing miracle it was. We've spoken about it once before. It was a stone and it went through his helmet and it killed him. Yeah, it hit him on the forehead, but he was well protected. The pasuk describes the armour.
With what?
Through his helmet?
Yes, the stone pierced the helmet. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't going to say this, but I'll say it very quickly, and that is that on the basis of the stone piercing the helmet, normally the stone would just bounce off the helmet. There is since that time, we are nowadays nohag to do a bris milah with a metal knife. As is brought by, I think it's the... It's either the Beis Yosef, I think it might be the Beis Yosef on the Torah, brings this, that up until that point, a bris milah was always done with a stone. When Sephora, wife of Moshe, did the bris milah on her son, it says she took a tsar, a flint stone. Stone was the item used, a sharpened stone was used for bris milah. But when the metal on the helmet of Goliath gave way to the stone thrown by David, we now give kovet to metal for having made way for the stone, and now we use a metal knife for a bris milah. You could do bris milah with any sharp item. It's brought in I've seen it. I think it's in Hilchos Bris Milah. It's in the Torah Shulchan Aruch, but it's not the Torah itself. It's one of the Mefarshim on the Torah, and it's either the Beis Yosef or the Bach. I'm not sure on that. Yeah, yeah. And I first heard this in the name of Rabbi Roberts. Someone told it to me in the name of Rabbi Roberts, and then I found out where it was and I saw it. Yeah, but I think it's either the Bach or the Beis Yosef in Hilchos Bris Milah, or because of the metal helmet of Goliath gave way to the stone. Anyway. The Chidah in his Pirush on Tehillim called Yosef Tehillos, he says that this pasuk is talking about a kind of Robin Hood character, someone who steals from the rich and gives to the poor. Robin Hood in English folklore has gone down as a hero, yes. An absolute folk hero. In Halacha, he's an unbelievable Rasha. You can't steal from the rich to give to the poor. That's called Geneva. Yeah, you're not allowed. You can't do that. Yeah. So he learns Kehila Rosh Al Tavas Nasho over Teir Berich Miyitz Hashem. He says it's about a person who steals, even if he's stealing from the rich to give to the poor. Very nice. You steal money and then you give it away to tzedakah. Very nice. Nice mitzvah. No way. It's not a mitzvah at all. It's a tremendous aveira. Yeah. So Robin Hood does not get a good write up in halachic terms. Now we have a very interesting machlokus. Yes,
the Russia praises himself for this if he does such a thing.
Yeah, look at me, what a tzaddik I am, I give money to the poor. Yeah, well, where does money come from? You know, so yeah. Now the Let me pose a shaila to you. What would happen, a halachic shaila, what would happen if a person eats an item that is not kosher? If that's somewhere to eat an item that's not kosher, let's say he eats it b'mezid or b'shogeg, he's going to eat an item which is osur b'achila, does he make a bracha on the food? Does he make a bracha on that food? So, the halacha, the Rambam brings halacha, it's in Hilchos Brachos, Perek Aleph, halacha yotes, kala ochel davar ha'osur, anyone who eats an item which is forbidden, bein bezodin, bein b'shkoga, whether he eats it deliberately or accidentally, ein mevarech alav, lo b'atchilav, lo b'asof. No bracha, no bracha rishona, no bracha charona either.
If you're in the desert, and it's going to keep you alive, even though it's a mitzvah, to eat it, to keep yourself alive, it's still no bracha.
It would appear so.
Yeah.
Unless maybe we can say this is food that this man has to eat to keep alive, and therefore he's actually not doing an avera. For him, it's not osur. So I actually don't know. I don't know about that. But
you don't say a bracha over a medicine. You don't say a
no, that's over medicine. That's
food to keep you alive. It comes in actually like a medicine.
Because medicine isn't considered food. I think the reason why there's no bracha on medicine is it's not considered food, and maybe the proof of that is if you like the taste of the medicine, then you do make a bracha. Yeah? So maybe because proper food, maybe, I don't know, in that case, John, I don't know, yeah, maybe because it's a mitzvah for him to eat that food to keep himself alive, maybe then he would need to make a bracha. The Rambam paskens, no bracha on any food, if it's not before, not after. And the Rambam quotes a Mishnah from Maseches Brachos, where the Mishnah is on Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph, first Mishnah of the Perek. The three people eat together, then they have to make a zimun, and then the Mishnah brings a whole load of foods which are a person should not really eat. Demai, Maserishon, Tevel, the second half of the Mishnah. Tevel, Maserishon, Shenobit, Glossary, Moss, if you've got Maserishon, but you haven't yet separated Chumor, he eats Tevel, which is food where Chumor's Mises have not been separated. Maserishon, Hector, Shalom, Niftu, if it hasn't been redeemed properly, and so on. These kinds of foods, for that food, there's an Ein Mesamnin Aleihem, for that you would not make a Zimran. Now the Rambam, very surprisingly, takes this Mishnah, which is all about Zimun, whether you say Rabbi San Varech, whether you can make a Zimun, and he says it's far more wide-reaching than that. It's not just the Zimun, it's a Bracha. You wouldn't even make a Bracha on it. The Ravid disagrees with the Rambam. And the Ravid says, no, that Mishnah says the Ravid is talking about Zimun. Yeah, but you don't make a zimun on food. But for bracha, of course you'd make a bracha on it. And the Ravid proves his point by saying that the reason why you don't make a zimun on when you eat fruit is because fruit is not enough of a su'uda to join people together into one unit. If you haven't got a joined unit, then you haven't got a zimun. So he says it's the same thing. If the food is forbidden, then that will not join the people together to form a unit, and therefore you can't make a zimun. But it's only the zimun that you can't make, and that's what the Mishnah says. Zimun is what you can't make. But a bracha, you can make. Yeah? That's how the Ravid learns. So here we have a big machlokas, Rambam and Ravid, as to whether you make a bracha when you eat non-kosher food. Says the Rambam, no you don't. Says the Ravid, yes you do. Okay, so far so good. Now the Rosh, let me get this right. Yeah. Oh, the Rosh, bring in Brachas, on the Gemara, on this Gemara in Brachas, Taf Mem Hei Amud Aleph, the Rosh brings a proof from a piece of Gemara. And he brings the proof as well. I'll show you the Gemara first. The Gemara is in two places, actually. It's in the ticket from Sanhedrin. It's in Sanhedrin, Daf Vav Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Hari Shagozal Sa'o Shel Chitim. Supposing a person steals a Sa'o of wheat, a measurement of wheat, Utachona, and he grinds it up, Va'afa'a, and he bakes it. Ve'hifrish memeno chala, and he separates chala from it. So he's a very frum gamav. Right? Yeah? Kate sad mevarech. What bracha should he make? Now, what exactly is the question? Is the question, what bracha should he make when he separates the challah? Or is the question, what bracha should he make when he comes to eat the food? It's not quite clear which bracha it is. But so what bracha should he make? And the Gemara's response is, Ein ze mevarech elo menoit. When this man makes a bracha, it's a disgusting bracha to Hashem. You think HaKadosh Baruch is going to welcome such a bracha? It's not a ganav. He steals the wheat, separates challah, and now he wants to make a bracha. Either a bracha on separation of challah or a bracha on eating the food. So when he makes that bracha, Ein ze mevarech elo menoit. That's not a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch will welcome. That bracha is considered by Hashem to be disgusting. Shenema, and the Gemara quotes this pasuk. What's the pasuk? And about such a bracha, there is a pasuk which says, surprise, surprise, uvotzea beirech mi'etz Hashem, our pasuk. That votzea, because the word votzea can also mean to break bread. Yeah. So uvotzea beirech, this man is going to break bread. This man is going to have his meal. Uvotzea beirech, such a man, when he makes his bracha, mi'etz Hashem is disgusting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Rosh, from here we can see a most wonderful proof for the Raivad. What's the proof? He's got to make a bracha. Well, the fact is that when he makes the bracha will not be welcomed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he still, halachically, must make a bracha. So here we can see, says the Rosh, here we have a proof for the Raivad. We've got a machlokus between the Rambam and the Raivad. The Rambam says you don't make a bracha on food that's forbidden. The Raivad says, yes, you do. Well, here's the case. He's stolen the bread. He now wants to make his bracha. The bracha won't be welcomed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he's still got to make it. Says the Rosh, here we have a proof for the Raivad that you still have to make you still have to make a bracha. So
if he makes a bracha over forbidden food or stolen food, he might think to himself, I can't be such a bad person.
Yeah,
I've still got to make a bracha.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah. All right. Yes, perverted logic there. Yeah. But the fact is, Hilchus brachas still require him to make a bracha. Even though he's stolen the food, he's got no right to eat it. Yeah, he's still the halachas of brachas insist he's got to make a bracha. The bracha won't be welcomed, but he's still got to make a bracha. That is how the Rosh learns this piece of Gemara. Says the Rosh, here we have a proof for the Raivad that you do need to make a bracha. So the Kesef Mishnah on this Rambam says no. So it turns to the Rosh and he says, you got the wrong pshat in the Gemara. You got to read the Gemara again. Now let's read the Gemara again, as understood by the Kesef Mishnah. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Harish Gazal Sasha Chitim. If a person steals a saw of wheat, to honey grinds it, rafani bakes it, vivishim and achali sebeis chala, keitzad mevareich. What? He should make a bracha? Ein ze mevareich el menoit. A bracha like that is disgusting. No way should he make a bracha like that. So the Kesef Mishnah learns the whole Gemara as being like a rhetorical thing. Should this man make a bracha? No way should he make a bracha. That now becomes the support for the Rambam, that you don't make a bracha. You want to eat food that's not kosher? Yeah, you ain't some a bracha and a nice, disgusting thing to say. You don't make a bracha like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want a bracha like that, and so you should not make a bracha like that. That's how the Kesef Mishnah learns the Gemara. Oh, good. And then the Kesef Mishnah goes on and brings a few other proofs on this halacha. Okay. That's the, one other small thing which I forgot to say, I just realized, from going back to the Yalkut Me'am Lois, Uvotzea Berich, now we understand the sort of Uvotzea, Betzea Satas means breaking bread. Says the Yalkut Me'am Lois, Uvotzea Berich, if first you break the bread, let me get this right. Yes, Votzea, you break bread and you eat it. If first you break it, Votzea, you break the bread, you eat the bread, and then Beirech, then you start worrying about what bracha to make, Mi'etz Hashem, that's disgusting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You've got to make the bracha before you eat it. Yeah, don't put food in your mouth till you've made a brach on it. So that's how the Akumem learns this pasuk of Otsea. If you break the bread, i.e. you eat the bread, and then Berech, then you want to make the bracha. Yeah, that's how he learns. Nice pshat? That's how the Akumem learns pshat in this Gemara. Okay. Yeah.
You still tried to make the bracha. You might have forgotten.
Yes, absolutely.
You might have forgotten to make the bracha.
You should put the food, if you can, take the food out of your mouth, and then you make the bracha. Yeah, if it's not too, what's the word? Yeah, if it's possible, if you can take it out. You can't take a liquid out. No. Yes, if it's not too mottled, if it's not too, what's the word, mottled? Crumbly. Yeah, you haven't chewed it up, so not too messy. Otherwise, you just put the food to one side in your mouth and then make the bracha, But he says, Be'etzea, Be'etzea, you're going to make the bracha before your Be'etzea. Make the, first you come the Be'etzea, and then you come the Be'etzea.
Yeah, what you're doing, sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. Good. Now, 1 second, what was that the answer to? Yeah. Good. Okay, let's... A piece of Yalkut Shimoni. Oh, yes. Oh, no. Sorry. No, before we come to Yalkut Shimoni, let's... Right. It'll be recorded, so you can catch it. If you need to go, you can catch it. Don't worry. Let's come back to that Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin really analyzes this pasuk very, very, very closely. Let's come and go through the Gemara here. Rabbi Lezer ben Oshel, it's on Sanhedrin Daf Bavam and Beis. Rabbi Lezer ben Oshel, Rabbi Yosi Aglili Omer. Rabbi Lezer, the son of Rabbi Yosi Aglili, says, Osur Livtsoa. It is osur. He have a whole new meaning on the word livtsoa. Potsea has yet another meaning. The word livtsoa can mean to make a compromise, and this is a message for dayonim. If two litigants come to court, come to Beis Din, they've got a machlokas between them. So Reuven says Shimon owes me £100, and Shimon says I don't owe you a penny. It is osur for the dayonim to say, you know what? Pay him £50. Let's make a compromise. He's claiming 100. You deny it all. So pay him 50 and let's call it a day. That's not mishpat. The way Rashi learns it is that once these two litigants come to court, if they wanted to make a compromise, they would have done it before coming to Beis Din. They don't want to make a compromise. Reuben's claiming 100 and Shimon's denying the whole lot. So it is also for the dayanim to make a compromise. It's not mishpat. It's not. Reuven says he doesn't owe me 50, he owes me 100. And Shimon says I don't even owe him 50. So one shouldn't make a compromise. It is also to make a compromise. You've got to see the court case through and come to a real halachic decision as to whether he owes the money or not. And any dayon who does make a compromise, he's a sinner. To make a compromise. And anybody who praises a dayan who makes a compromise, he's disgusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And about such a person we have a pasuk, the one who blesses the compromising dayan, has disgusted HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's another pshat in Hagmar. Ella, but what should the dayanim do? Yikov hadin es ha'har. The law should pierce the mountain. In other words, a mountain is a large, impenetrable object. The din should get to the bottom of it so that the law should even be able to pierce through a difficult, tough mountain. In other words, you get to the bottom of the court case and you decide, is Reuven's claim right or not right? You get to the bottom of the case. Don't jump to make a compromise. Then the Gemara goes on. Let's get this. A few lines later, the Gemara carries on. Rebbe Lezer Omer. Oh, then we have this halacha then we have the case of Rebbe Lezer. I'll read it through now just to get it in full. Rebbe Lezer has a different pshat on our pasuk. Harish got on such a chitim person steals the sod, reads it to Chonav Afo, and he grinds it, and he bakes it, hivish menachal, and he sepits chalo. Well, here we now have two pshat in. Either the pshat of the Rosh, Kitzan Mavarech, what kind of bracha should he make? Well, he should make a bracha, but when he does, Ein Zeh Mavarech El Menoyes, it'll be disgusting to Hashem. Alternatively, the pshat of the base of the Kesef Mishnah, Kitzan Mavarech, what? Should he make a bracha? Ein Zeh Mavarech El Menoyes, that's a disgusting thing to do. He should not make a bracha at all. Val Zeh Neman, about this, the pasuk says, Ve'etzeh Berich, Nietz Hashem. Oh, now we have a third pshat, and I think this is the final pshat on the Gemara on this. Reb Meir Omer, Lo ne'ma botseya elo k'neged Yehuda. This word botseya in our pasuk of botseya berich nietz Hashem is a reference to none other than Yehuda, the Yehuda ben Yaakov. Shenema, because we have a pasuk in Parshas Vayeshev where the brothers met Yosef. They meet him and they're not sure what to do. Vayemi Yehuda el Echov. They're really considering the possibility of killing him. Killing Yosef, so he had the pasuk here. It's in Bereishis chapter Lamed Zayin pasuk Kavod. Vayomer Yehuda Lechov. Yehuda said to his brothers, "Ma betza." Ah, yeah. And this, ma betza. What profit is there to be found? Kinara gesochinu by killing our brother. The chesinu estomer and covering up his blood. If we sort of cover up the fact that we've killed him, what profit is there to be made? But rather, luchuvenim kareinu la yishmeinim. Come, let's sell him to the Yishmaelim. V'yadin al tivo, and let's not touch him. Kiyachinu v'sarinu, because he is our brother. Now, interesting. That word betza in that pasuk is translated by the Targum. Ma mumen mesahane lona. Mumen, money. What money are we going to make out of this by killing him? Yeah, well, what money are we going to get by killing him? So therefore, let's not kill him. So we can see that this word betza in the pasuk, same word there. Yeah, betza. Yeah, what's the pasuk?
Ma betza b'dami v'rusi yashachas.
We use the same niggun at Hanukkah. Yes, we sing that ends that same tune. Yeah. Ma betza, I think that pasuk means again profit, but I'm not sure. See how little I know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
What benefit my soul went down to the grave? What benefit, isn't it?
In that pasuk also means benefit.
What benefit my soul
goes
down to the grave?
Oh, right, very good. Yes, it's a benefit. So here's Yehuda who uses the same word betza. Now betza kinar gesachin. What profit will there be for killing our brother? And the Targum translates it absolutely clearly. Ma momen misane lana. What money will benefit us? So I have a sefer home, a beautiful sefer called Nefesh Hager, which is a sefer on the Targum. It was given to me by a chavrus of mine, an old chavrus of mine, who ironically is a ger. And he gave me this sefer, it's a bit of a joke, but it's a beautiful sefer. Sefer on Targum Unkos on the Torah. And he explains, he's got a whole shot there which I didn't fully understand, but I have to say it a little bit. And that is, just for the sake of the ger with whom I used to learn was Yehuda Yoni Rubinstein. Rabbi Yehuda Yoni Rubinstein is quite a well-known, he learned in Gateshead, yeah, now he's in Manchester. Yeah, he's a well-known orator, he's a brilliant speaker. Yeah, he does a lot of career, he does a lot of good work. So Yehuda Yoni, when we were good friends, we learned for a while, and he gave me this sefer. So on that pasuk, the sefer Nefesh Hager, on this targum, ma momen misane lona, what benefit, what financial benefit will we have? So there, on the Nefesh Hager explains, he says, supposing we were to kill Yosef, so we'll be, that means that our eventual Yerusha will be all the greater. Right? Then as and when Yaakov Avinu dies, we'll all have more money, because we won't need to share it with Yosef, because he won't be alive anymore. So he says, Yehuda turns to his brother and says, in case you think that we will make a financial gain by killing Yosef, we won't. Why not? Because we'll never be able to tell Yaakov, v'chisino estomer, we're going to have to cover up his blood, we're going to have to cover up the fact that we've killed him, and so Yaakov will always think he's still alive, and therefore, for some reason which I didn't understand, therefore we will not end up making a financial gain out of it. In case you think, yeah, it's something along those lines. Oh. It's something like that. I don't fully understand, but he says something along those lines. In case you think we'll make a profit because we'll make more money on our eventual Yerusha, in fact, we won't.
There's no witnesses to his death. And therefore, there's a doubt whether he's dead. Therefore, there can't be a Yerusha.
It's something like that. He's got a whole lomdus on it, which I don't fully understand, but it's along those lines. Anyway, it's something like that. So in case you think we will make a financial gain, we won't. At any rate, The Gemara in Sanhedrin relates our pasuk to Yehuda. Let's go through this. This is from Reb Meir. Let me find the place. Yeah. This is the word Botzea, and that refers to Yehuda, and only refers to Yehuda, Shenema, Vayemi Yehuda Lechav Ma Betza. What prophet is there, Kinargus, when we kill our brother? This is a criticism of Yehuda. So Rashi explains, he's criticizing Yehuda. Why is he criticizing Yehuda? Because Yehuda had the attention of the brothers. And he turns to the brothers and he says, let's not kill him. What should we do? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. Now, if only Yehuda would have taken that one step further, he could have done, and he could simply have said, let's not kill him, let's take him back to our father. He could have said that, and he had the brother's attention, and he had an air of authority about him. We see that he didn't have an air of authority because they listened to him, and they did eventually sell. Yosef down to Mitzrayim. So if he had their attention and he had the authority, he could have taken it one step further, and he could have said, "Let's just take him straight back home." And therefore, it's a criticism. Pardon? He would have survived everything.
He would have survived the pit. The brothers knew the din, that if you throw somebody into the pit with full of animals, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the animals, and therefore if he survived that, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want Yosef to be he wasn't Chayav Misa, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't stop a man killing another man, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu can stop an animal killing a man. And therefore, that was the din. They thought, the brothers thought, put him into the pit with the wild animals, with the snakes and the scorpions, and then Kadosh Baruch Hu will deal with it. And the fact that he survived the pit, that was Yehuda's chance, maybe. This is what Yehuda's chance, because the brothers knew that Yosef had survived the pit. Therefore, they knew that Yosef was no longer Chayav Misa, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu had protected Yosef from the pit.
Wow, yeah, oh, very good. So it looked as though things were going well for Yosef, and Yehuda should have jumped on that opportunity and got him back home. Yeah, oh, Shkeh.
By Ruach HaKodesh, knew it was Hashem's will that Yosef should go down to Egypt.
Yeah, that is brought, I saw that. Yeah, the Marshal speaks about that. We'll come to that. Yeah, oh, Shkeh, we're coming to the Marshal. Yeah, that, we'll come to that in a minute. Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah, something like that. Yes. Okay. So here our Gemara, Reb Meir is giving a criticism of Yehuda. Of Teberich Mias Hashem, Yehuda said, "Ma bet zakenoga zakenu." And then Reb Meir goes further. V'chol hamavoriches Yehuda, and anyone who praises Yehuda for saving Yosef's life, hareis aminoit. He's disgusting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do not praise Yehuda. He didn't go as far as he should have done. V'al zeh ne'emar, and about this the pasuk says, and here's our pasuk, v'tzeh berich mi'etz Hashem. Yeah? That's how Reb Meir learns it. So, v'tzeh berich mi'etz
Hashem. Let's take him back to his father.
Take him back to
his father.
Yeah. Take him back to our father. Yeah, take him back.
What story would Yosef tell his father? They threw me in the pit of snakes.
Maybe Yosef wouldn't have said a word. Maybe he could have kept it quiet. At any rate, that's the Gemara in...
Talking adversely about the brothers with dreams, he's unlikely to have kept quiet about what his brother did to him, to put him in the pit. So there's another question. How could he go back to his father now?
At any rate, that's how the Gemara... This is the three pshatim on the Gemara. So we've had the first pshat, that Livtsoa is to make a compromise. The second pshat is about stealing about breaking bread, and you steal the wheat and make a brocha, and the third pshat is reference to Yehuda. Now, one very interesting ha'ora is brought by the riff, as printed in the Ein Yaakov. The riff on the Ein Yaakov notes that when it comes to Reb Meir, here in this Gemara, Reb Meir says, Reb Meir Omer, lo ne'ema b'tzeya Elo keneged Yehuda. Our word uvotzea beriach mi'etz Hashem. Our word uvotzea is only a reference to Yehuda. Now, why does Reb Meir automatically remove the other pshatim? When we had two pshatim earlier, we had the pshat about the compromise, and then we had the pshat about making the bracha on the forbidden item. Now, when we had the pshat on the forbidden item, it wasn't to exclude the first pshat on the compromise. Maybe we can include both pshatim. But along comes Reb Meir, and he says, no, I disagree with those first two pshatim. It's nothing to do with compromising and a beis din. It's nothing at all to do with making a bracha on a forbidden item, but rather it is only to do with Yehuda. So the Rif says, why does Reb Meir discount the other two pshatim? And he points out that the word in the pasuk uvotzea is spelled vaveis tzadi'ayin. Now, really, the word uvotzea would normally be spelt with an extra vav after the base. Uvotzea beirech, that word uvotzea, you would expect it to be spelt vav veis, vav tzadi aleph. But it's written choser vav, it's missing that vav, and therefore the word uvotzea could be voweled as reading uvetza. Without that other vav after the vase, it reads the same as betza, the exact word that Yehuda said, ma betza kinaregesachinu. That is the first pshat in the Gemara about compromise, and the second pshat in the Gemara about making a bracha when you make a bracha on bread that you're breaking. That relies on it being uvotzea, breaking bread, making a compromise. It's a verb, uvotzea, the one who makes a compromise, uvotzea, the one who breaks bread. But to be spelt, to mean that, you would expect the extra vav after the vase. Along comes Reb Meir and says, there isn't that vav. Therefore, darshan the word uvotzea as though it says uvetza, exactly the word that Yehuda said, ma betza kinaregesachinus. Because there's a vav missing, that we have a right to darshan it as betza. Along comes Reb Meir and he says, lo ne'mar. That's the pasuk. The Gemara. Rameh Omer. Lo ne'emar vetzea ela keneged Yehuda. It only refers to Yehuda, and Rameh disagrees with the first two pshatim. Why? Because it's written without the expected vav. That's how the Rif learns this Gemara. Good. The Marasha on this Gemara learns exactly as you were saying, Louis. You have a nod from this now. The Marasha learns differently. The Marasha says, Reb Meir is not criticizing Yehuda. And he says the word Beirech has an exact opposite meaning. We think the word Beirech means to bless or to praise. And the Marasha quotes a pasuk. And pasuk's in Melachim Aleph, chapter Kaf Aleph, pasuk Yud Gimel, which says, "Beirach novos Elokim v'melech." Now, this pasuk is part of a rather gruesome story, the story of how the wicked king and wicked queen, Achav and Izevel, they framed this innocent man, Novos, in order to steal his vineyard. Achav wanted the vineyard, they framed him, and they brought trumped up charges. They had falsified Eidos to say, Beirach Novos Elokim, that this man Novos has cursed Elokim, God, Vomelech, and he's also cursed the king. And on the basis of that, Vayotziyuhu Michus Va'ir, they took him out to the city, Vayiskeluhu, and they stoned him, Vavonim with stones, Vayomos, and he died. And then Izevel comes to Achav, and she says, good news, Achav, my darling Achav, good news, you've got the kerem from Novos. Now, the point being that the word Beirach can mean to curse. Yeah? Beirach Novos Elokim Vomelech. Says the Marasha, the uvotzea beirich.
When they took his vineyard, he cursed Hashem.
No. The whole thing was a trumped up charge. It was false. It was a lie. Novus had done nothing wrong. They wanted his vineyard, yeah. So they brought trumped up charges that he'd cursed HaKadosh Baruch and he'd cursed the king. Whoa, cursed God, cursed the king. Right, take him out and stone him. They stoned him, and then they took his vineyard. Yeah? They were Rishayim, yeah? Achav and Izevel. Now, so we see from this pasuk that the word beirach can mean to curse. Oh, so the Marasha has a homie shot on this. Says the Marasha, Yehuda did the right thing. Yehuda was absolutely right in not, he did not want, don't kill Yosef, he says, but let's sell him down to Egypt. Why did Yehuda say let's sell him down to Egypt? Because Yehuda saw, as he said, I know you both said this, yeah, that Yehuda foresaw that the whole of Golus Mitzrayim was to come about through these incidents, through the whole, and Yosef going down to Egypt was the catalyst that would eventually start off Golus Mitzrayim. Yaakov and his children would follow. And then we have the slavery, followed by Yosef rise to power, and then the slavery, and then followed, of course, by Yitzhak Mitzrayim. But it's got to start somewhere, and it starts here with the sale of Yosef down to Mitzrayim. When Yehuda said, let's sell him down to Egypt, Yehuda had all that in mind in order to bring about the eventual Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Therefore, Yehuda is to be praised. Therefore, the pasuk says, "Uvotzea beirech," using this word beirech in the sense of cursing. Anyone who curses Yehuda, nietz Hashem, is disgusting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yehuda is praiseworthy. He did the right thing in selling Yosef down to Egypt because it was going to be the catalyst for Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It was going to bring about the eventual Yitzhak Mitzrayim. So the Marshal learns that Yehuda is to be praised. So the Gemara reads, let's go back now on Reb Meir. Holy Pshat now in Reb Meir. Rameh Omer, Lo Nema Betzer Ele Kenegad Yehuda, the prosecutor refers to Yehuda, Shenema, Vayim Yehuda Elechav Ma Betzah, Kinar Gesachinu, what profit is there to be gained by killing our brother? And then we say, V'chol Hamavori Ches Yehuda, anyone who curses Yehuda for this, how is him annoyed? He's disgusting to Hashem. Va'alfenema, and about this, the prosecutor says, V'etzeh Beirich Nietz Hashem, the one who curses the boat Seah, the one who said Ma Betsa, Yehuda, anyone who curses Yehuda for that, Nietz Hashem, he's disgusting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how the Marshal learns the Pshat. So very similar to what you were saying, that Yehuda had it in mind, he foresaw Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and he had it all in mind. And then the Marshal goes on to say that the name of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, is almost identical to the name of Yehuda, which has got the same letters as Yud Kei Vav Kei, plus an extra dalet, and therefore Yehuda was at one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this, and it was really the right thing to do to sell Yosef down to Mitzrayim. There's an amazing piece of Meshech Chochma on this pasuk in Vayeshev about this idea of Yehuda. And the Meshech Chochma says as follows. Who was there? Who was present at the sale of Yosef? Which brothers were there? Well, Reuven was not. Reuven had got, Rashi says in the parish of the Reuven, where on the apostle later it says, Vayoshev Reuven el Haber, Reuven came back to the pit, and he says, oh my goodness, where's Yosef? He's not in the pit anymore. Well, where was Reuven at the time? He'd gone back, it was his turn to go back to help his father Yaakov, or he'd gone to do teshuvah. He was constantly doing teshuvah for having moved his mother's bed, Leah's bed, in with Yaakov. So he wasn't present. Either he'd gone to do teshuvah, he'd gone to help Yaakov. Either way, he wasn't there. So Reuben was not there. Who was there? Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Don, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. Yosef is, of course, in the pit. And Binyamin never went. Binyamin was back home with Yaakov. Pardon?
Nine
of them. That's it. Nine, excluding Yosef, excluding Binyamin, and excluding Reuven. Yes, of course. Thank you. Nine of them. Right? Now.
The miners in Chile.
Yeah.
The pit.
Oh, in the pit. Another name. Yeah, absolutely. Now, of those brothers who were there, Yehuda has to think to himself, well, who's here? Excuse me. Don and Naphtali, who are the children of Bilhah. Gad and Asher, who are the children of Zilpah. There are four brothers in all who are the sons of these two Shafachos. Vehu Na'ar Espenei Bilhah Vespenei Zilpah. Yosef was very close to the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. So, Yehuda thinks to himself, if I suggest that we send, that we take Yosef back home, those four, Don, Naphtali, God, and Osher, will vote for that. If it comes to a vote, what should we do with Yosef? Those four, the sons of the two Shvachas, Bilhah and Zilpah, who are very close with Yosef, they will vote to save his life and to take him back home. The others, Shimon, Levi, Yisachar, and Zvulun, will almost certainly vote against the idea. So the score, and they'll vote, either they'll vote to kill him, or they'll vote to send him down to, they'll probably vote to kill him. So Yehuda has to think to himself, what should I do? I will be the deciding factor here. It's down to me. I have the casting vote, says Yehuda. This is how the Meshech Chochma says. So the Meshech Chochma says, we're back to the idea of, it would be down to his vote would be the deciding vote. Yeah, that's it, the casting vote. And therefore, he was the one who said, L'chuvenim k'renu la'ishmenim, let's sell him down I vote that we sell him down to the Mitzrayim. And if it comes to vote, then it's the vote, the others would be voting for, it would be a score of four all, and my fifth vote will swing things in favour of selling him down to the Ishmaelim. That's how the Meshech Chochma
learns. On the Beis Din, if this was a Beis Din, you've got to have a majority of one.
You can have a majority of one for financial matters, yes, and for maybe not for Malkus, but for Misa you need a majority of two. Yeah,
so you didn't have a majority of two.
Yeah, but he's voting. I'm not voting to kill him. I'm voting to sell him down to Egypt.
He had one.
To say
he didn't have two.
Yeah. So you're saying there wouldn't have been a majority of two to kill him anyway.
Yeah,
yeah, because
that's
that.
If
Seder's
lucky, you need a majority of one.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yeah. But to kill, for Chiv Misa, you do need a majority of two. Yeah. Good.
We'll get that majority, that's what
you're
saying.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Good. Just a couple of small things to finish. And that is the Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Kisisa. And it's O space. It's right at the end of O space on Kisisa. So let me just get this. Here we are. I don't fully understand this Medrash Tanchuma. This is Medrash Tanchuma, the end of O space in Kisisa. Says as follows. Oh. Yeah. Bo Ure, come and see. Chiboson shel Yisrael, the love for Yisrael, the love HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for Yisrael, she'avirus sehen mevion lidei ma'alos gedolos, that even their avirus bring them to high levels. Ve'im avirus sehen kach, and if their avirus can bring them to high levels, z'chiyo sehen alachas kavam v'chamas kavachim, because their mitzvahs and their good deeds will bring them to high levels. What's the story? At Motzi we find, Kishashalach Yaakov is Yosef Eitzelechov, when Yaakov sent Yosef to his brothers, Kimin Sharoah, so when they saw him, Vayim Ishalechov, Vayim Ishal Ochiv, Hinei Baal Hachalim is Halozeh, Bo, let me get the pasuk, sorry, I'm going to get this one right. Vayim Ishal Ochiv, Hinei Baal Hachalim is Halozeh, Bo, behold, here comes this man, the master of the dreams. The Atah now, come, v'nargenu, let's kill him. What did they do in the end? Hishlichuhu lefar. They threw him into the pit.
It was in Dothan, wasn't it?
It was in Dothan, yes, in Dothan. Thank you, yeah, in Dothan. Omru, then they said, Nochal, let's eat. V'nishten, let's drink. V'achakach, and after that, na'aleyu, then we'll bring him up. V'nargenu, and then we'll kill him. So let's have a meal now. He's stuck in the pit. He's safe. He's in the pit. Can't get out. Oh yeah. So at this stage in the story, they're saying we're throwing. Yeah. That's, yes. He's already in the pit. He's in the pit, and it was after he'd been thrown in the pit.
Wasn't it Jonathan was saying that if the trial was in the pit, if he survived? Then
no. He's in the pit. No, he's in the pit, and he's survived the pit.
They weren't relying on Hashem judging whether he would survive Misa or not. They were going to kill him anyway, so just put him there for storage.
According to this chat, yes. It's possible that when they threw him in the pit, either threw him in the pit hoping that the animals, the scorpions and snakes would do their job, or or as you say, just a temporary storage while they would decide what to do. Yeah. This merger seems to say it was a temporary thing till we decide what to do. But look, while he's in the pit, what do they say? Omru, they said, Nochal, let's eat something. Vanishta, let's drink something. Lachakach, and after that, Nalehu, we'll bring him up, and Nagehu, and then we'll kill him. Yeah, it does sound cold-blooded. Well, okay, they were tzaddikim. Let's not forget that.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They eat and drink and...
Yeah, yeah. They had the cheshven. They had the cheshven.
I heard also that when they went down to Dothan,
yeah,
they didn't go there to tend the sheep. They went down to indulge themselves and they got drunk.
Yeah, that is brought in. That's brought in Rashi on the Sedra.
Let's eat and drink. Yeah. It was more of indulgence.
Yes, yeah.
So
that's it. I address it.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a bit surprising.
It is a bit surprising. Also, I'll tell you another interesting thing.
What's going on?
If they're still thinking of killing him, and if they're killing him as an act of Bastin, then there's another problem, because the Bastin has to fast. On a day when the Bastin give their psak on someone who might be Chaimisa, they have to fast. So here they're saying, let's eat and drink. Well, till, I think, till after the psak.
He went to indulge himself.
Yeah. Liros est that word S, in that pasuk, it's got dots on top of the aleph and the sof, and dots in the Torah normally imply a non-literal meaning, and therefore don't understand it literally. They went to tend to the sheep. They went and Rashi, yeah, that's right. Liris to Satsman. I think Rashi says that. Liris, yeah, as you said, yeah. So we listen to what happens. So he's in the pit, and they say, no, let's eat, finish, and let's drink. After that, we'll bring him up an hour again, and we'll kill him. What happened? Achlu, they ate. Vashasu, and they drank. Ba'u levarech, and then it came time to bench. Omar lohem Yehuda. Yehuda turns to his brothers and he says to them, Onu mevakshim larug nefesh. We are planning to kill someone. Unvarech lelekenu, and we should also, and we're also thinking simultaneously of blessing our Kodesh Baruch Hu for the food. Ein onu mevarchin elam noatzin. We're not really blessing Hashem. We are disgusting to Hashem. And about this it says, uvetzeh berich nietz Hashem. You want to bless? You want to bench for the meal? Nietz, it's disgusting. And then you want to bless Hashem for the food and then kill Yosef? That's uvetzeh berich nietz Hashem. You're blessing Hashem and then you want to kill someone? That's disgusting. And therefore, let's sell him down to the Ishmaelim, the Ardenu Al Tivo, but we won't actually touch him. That's the Majest Tamchuma.
Did they bench afterwards?
They must have benched. I'm sure they benched. Of course they benched. No, it'd be disgusting to kill him. Let's not be hypocrites by benching and then killing.
We'll bench.
We won't kill him. We'll sell him. It's not so bad. We'll sell him. Yeah? To bench and then murder? Ooh, that's disgusting.
To sell is praiseworthy.
They felt it's better than better than killing. But at least he's alive. But
killing, he's still
alive. Other Mephoshim,
easing their conscience.
Yeah, others say also selling a Yiddish neshama down to the worst place, spiritual place in the world, in Egypt, where there were no morals at all, was even worse than killing it. Yeah, okay, all right. Nope, shot him. All different shot him.
Because he was killing his soul. That way.
Yes, exactly. It's much worse.
It's
yes,
a physical.
Yes, it's a spiritual death.
You're taking him out of
my ball. I'm sending him to the Egyptians, which is worse than physically murdering him.
It's sort of different. It's one of the words is when you kill or kidnap.
Yeah,
yeah,
kidnap.
It's
yeah.
It's so they would be chayav misa by selling him.
Yeah.
Two more small things. Number one, from the Minchas Shai. If you look at the pasuk of Vaseh Berich Nietz Hashem, I don't know if it's printed in your sefer like this, but after the word Nietz, there's a vertical line. You got one? You got it there as well? Oh, a vertical line, which is called a psik. It's a comma. In fact, a psik is a comma. It's a gap. It's like a hefsek, a separator. So this is quite common in Tanakh when you have the Shem Hashem juxtaposed to something horrible, it's separated with a line. And when you read the pasuk, you should actually make a short pause there. That's the idea of the pasuk, is a comma. Uvetzeh berech nietz Hashem. make a gap. We don't. It's not very nice to have the word, a horrible word like niyetz, right next to the Shem Hashem. Well, it is next to the Shem Hashem. So what we do is we make a separation between them. Yeah, and you'll find that. Right, look out for it. You find it through Tanakh like that.
Respect Hashem's name.
Exactly. Respect Hashem's name. They shouldn't be next to an unpleasant word. Yeah, exactly. One other short idea from the Malbim, and then we can say we've done quite well on the Pasuk. The Malbim says, we have a Maimah Chazal, Yesh, and I forgot to look it up, so I can't remember where the Maimah Chazal comes from. Yesh le Moneh, Rotz Masayim. Sorry. Yesh le Moneh, if a person has Moneh, which is like 100 zuz, Rotz Masayim, he wants 200 zuz. He's not satisfied. Yeah? And if he's got 200, he wants 400. So human beings are not satisfied with their Gashmius attainments. In fact, any attainment in Gashmius is accompanied by frustration. I've got 100, that's an attainment, but now that I've got my 100, I'm frustrated not to have 200. Now I've got my 200, I'm frustrated not to have 400.
In every action, there's an equal opposite reaction.
Oh. That's it? Oh. Yeah, very good. So therefore, human attainments in the world of Gashmius can only lead to frustration. Our pasuk says, Ki Hillel Rasha, the Rasha is praising himself. He's a satisfied person. Why is he satisfied? How can a Rasha be satisfied? Surely he should be frustrated at not having attained even the higher goal. So why can it be that he's frustrated? The only answer can be, says the Malbim, Al Ta'avas Nafsho. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, unusually and uncharacteristically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has allowed him to attain all his desires. It's only when a person attains all his desires that you have Ki Hillel Rasha, he can praise himself. He's happy. He's happy with himself. Why is he happy? Because he's attained everything he wanted to attain. How on earth could that be? Surely, every attainment should be met with an opposite reaction, as you say, or frustration that he hasn't attained something even better. The answer is, here we're dealing with a Rasha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has treated unusually well. And he's allowed this Rasha to fulfill every whim and every fancy that he has, and he's not suffering from the usual frustration that people suffer. And therefore, this is David HaMelech turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the beginning of the chapter, Lama Hashem Tamid Baruch Hu, why do you stand afar? Why do you stand at a distance and you're treating this terrible Rasha to a happy life? And you're giving him everything he wants, and that's why he's satisfied. So Ki Hillel Rasha, when does the Rasha praise himself, and when is he so happy? Al Ta'avas Nafsho, when every desire of his heart, every desire of his soul is indeed fulfilled, which is unusual. Normally, it's met with frustration. But in fact, here we're talking about a Rasha whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided to treat, and he's given a good time in Olam Hazeh. And therefore the Rasha is Hillel, therefore the Rasha praises himself for it.
And he's satisfied
with all his tithes.
You're satisfied, you don't need to double it.
Yeah, he does not feel frustration because he really is genuinely satisfied because everything he wants, HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants him. And then here David is saying how awful this is that this Rasha has such a happy existence. That's how the Malbim knows the Peshatim here. Good.